Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we talk work and money for the rising professional. What's going on, good sir?
Living the dream, man. Living the dream.
Yeah, I still got struggle voice over here. It kind of feels like I'm playing injured. You know, I was stretching my voice before the show, drinking tea, felt like I had some heat compression on it. It's going on a week, so I'm not sure what this means. I'm not sure if, like, I'm about to turn into Doc Rivers or if something else is going on. I'm just hoping that this tea allows me to power through and that when we come back next time, I sound a little bit better.
Yeah, Doc Rivers always feels like he's struggling to talk about everything.
Yeah, Doc Rivers is amazing to me. Like, I don't know what's going on with that, man. I don't want to talk about it because then somebody will write in, well, actually, hashtag, well, actually, he has cancer of the throat and
he did.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to make fun of it.
It's amazing that you could talk.
I don't know. It's impressive to me, actually.
Yeah, I also don't want to sound like Mutombo either. But anyway, we got a listener question that deals with changing careers. We actually got a couple of questions, but we're only going to talk about one this week. And since I am in struggle mode, I'm going to let you drive this one a bit.
And yes, and y'all can write into us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. Do you have a question of your own that you'd like us to address on the show? I'm going to say this is from D because I'm not sure or if you know that we could say his whole name. Yeah.
So he specifically said to call him Daryl. So it's okay to say Daryl.
Okay, from Daryl. Hey guys, love the show. I'm 26 years old working in the corporate retail world, and I'm completely miserable at my job. I can recall in one of your podcasts, you mentioned looking to your managers to see your future, and honestly, my future looks pretty grim. Ha ha ha.
I bet he ain't really laughing.
Right now, I think that was an ironic laugh. Right now, I'm looking to have a career change, but I'm not quite sure what I want to pursue. Also, I fear that if I do have a career change, I may end up feeling the same way about the next job, making a lot less than I do now. Have any of you been at this point in your careers? And how do you find your way? And what do you believe are the best methods or resources in finding the right career to pursue? Thanks for all the great advice. Y'all are killing it. And then it's my understanding, I don't know if you want to add any piece here, but you reach back out to Daryl for a little bit more information.
Yeah. So I read the initial question and was like, okay, we could answer it based off of this, but then we could probably answer it better if we had more information. So I asked for additional context about what he does specifically, and he wrote this.
And that additional context is I work in the supply chain management as an analyst. I spend most of my time interacting with vendors and or our marketing team, creating sales reports, managing inventory levels and costs, analyzing, determining future sales trend and optimizing sales opportunities to improve revenue. I use a mixture of skills based on data analysis, statistics and economics to execute my role. I basically try to predict the future. That's what I'm trying to go into, predictive analysis. Shout outs to the data analysts of the world. And the main reason I do not like the job is that it lacks creativity. It doesn't make me feel any better just to increase a sales number. I would rather build or create something new. The only thing I like about this role is automating certain tasks in Excel with VBA when I have free time.
Yeah. And this is something that I hear from people where they're doing a job. The job is cool. They're good at it, but it doesn't really allow them to flex their creative muscle that much or whatever muscle it is that they want to use. Yeah, I didn't know that this was the exact field you were going into, brother, or trying to go into.
Yeah, I'm trying to
predict in the future.
Yeah, I talked a little bit, or I alluded to this on a future show, because those that have been following or listening to us for a while know I don't like to share too many goals. I like to share outcomes, but I think I'm at a point where I can share these a little bit more, and I'll expand upon on another show. But the trifecta, what I told you about in the Black Box discussion, which is the offline discussions that we have not yet anyway released to this show. Rich might be recording and storing somewhere so that he can blackmail me when I run for presidential office.
I got everything. I got like 30 files. So just you talking about shady things.
I only assumed. So, you know, to be fair, I record on my side as well. So we would just have to go down.
Oh, excuse me.
We will fall together, though. So that's the way it should be, grabbed in a bucket. But the trifecta was to write and publish the book. And for those that have been keeping up with that, what is that, 10 years I've been talking about this detox book album. But I did speak with I wouldn't say a publisher, and actually it was one of the listeners that put me in touch with this person. It's a marketing person. I'll just say that because I don't want to reveal the company. And she actually gave me a great idea. It does look like I'll self-publish. So that was goal number one. And I mean, that was always something that was probably going to occur. I was just trying to figure out if I should go through a publisher or publish myself. So I'm going to release that. Been working behind the scenes on the website and everything like that. I've got something in mind. So that is moving forward. I know I've been pretty quiet about it on a few shows because I'm just doing some things behind the scenes to get that, to make sure the launch is successful based on a number of lessons learned that I've had over the years with failed websites, blogs, and launches that just didn't go as I wanted to. So I'm going to use that to benefit myself and others. And then number two was to get into an executive leadership program at my job, which I kind of applied for off the cuff and then accidentally ended up getting into. And I only say accidentally because I mistimed it, but, you know, I'm not going block my blessing. So I applied for an executive leadership program that was 9 months, and I applied for a master's program that is 16 months. I'm waiting to hear back on that latter one. And so that was the trifecta: publish a book, get into executive leadership, and get into a master's program. And that was a long-winded way of saying that master's program will specialize in data analytics, big data.
Yo, you're going to end up with everything coming through at the exact same time.
You know, I was thinking about that, and I got to be careful what I start speaking into the universe, because I've literally, and I mean, you know, knock on wood or whatever, probability or what is it, planning, when planning and opportunity meets its luck, I guess. But everything that I'm like, hey, man, I wish this would happen lately, I've been like batting 100 at. So like, it's scary. Like some of the things I jokingly say and it comes to comes to fruition. So I'm like, I need to like be more quiet about what I'm speaking into the universe. Like I done fell into the zone of the secret right now because things are panning out, and I'm like, yo, man, maybe I should have like been more specific. Like I meant to do that not concurrently, but like if that could have been staggered a little bit. But you know what, God, you know what, whatever plan you have for me is cool. I'm not questioning MD. That just seems like a lot of pressure. But I remember, I think I was talking about it on the show like 2 months ago. I was like, man, I'm bored. I go to 9 to 5, I come home, I twiddle my thumbs, I go to the gym, I go to work, and I repeat 5 days a week. So that's not going to be the case for the next 16 months. So I will definitely be occupied. So, you know, count your blessings. But yeah, yes, predictive analysis will probably be a piece of the program. And I've been trying to get into data analytics, or I would say it another way. I've been trying to improve my data analytics skills and capabilities formally for a number of years. I've worked with data analysts as an auditor, and it's just an interesting skill set to me. And I definitely see it as something I can improve on. And that would be something I'm going to tie to this question, as, you know, I made this a lot about me, but as far as Daryl goes, I have tried the career change to answer your question. And I've talked about this. Even the people I was trying to apply for kept trying to steer me back into the career field I was already in. Like I would apply for an analytic position, and they would go, you know, we have this audit position open. And I'm like, I'm trying to get out of audit. And they're like, all right, well, we'll bring you in. And what I found, and it actually led me, it solidified probably a path that I was going to go to anyway, and that's going back to get my graduate program, or graduate master's, go into a graduate program to get my master's. And that is kind of building backwards, like, okay, what is the purpose or the goal that I have? Because I realized that they would be taking a chance on me. I mean, if we're being, you know, honest, like, and we talked about this before, when you want to get into a new career field that you don't have experience in, no matter how great or good your skill sets might be in another career field, then you're putting all the pressure on the company to take the chance on you. Like you may succeed, but you may very well fail. And then they've got somebody who has 10, 20, 15, 5, you know, whatever years of experience in this program. They're like, well, why should I take the chance on the new hire just because they're really skilled and good at A? They might not be really skilled and good at B.
That's like an episode in itself, man. Dealing with just dealing with that whole, why should I take a chance on you? Because it's real. You can have someone who has the skills and maybe they're not as eager. And it's like, do we go with that person or do we go with the person who's bushy tailed, but they're probably going to mess some things up? And sometimes it depends where that company is as a business. And there are things you can say to earn their confidence, but that's probably a discussion for another day.
Yeah. I mean, now that I've transition probably more formally into the hiring manager role, like I used to do interviews, but it was ultimately a panel decision, and then HR handled the negotiations. But I pretty much handle hiring from beginning to end now. And when I'm looking at, you know, these applications, that's definitely something that factors in that I didn't take into consideration as an applicant. I'm like, man, I know I can do this. This is literally my job's just got a different job title or a slightly different description, or I know I can learn it. But now when I see it on paper, I'm like, well, I got one person who's already demonstrated, and I got one person who looks like they have the capability to demonstrate it. And 9 times out of 10, I'm gonna go with the person who's already demonstrated it, because it minimizes my risk.
Well,
for the company, for myself, all up and down the chain.
Well, that, but then you also got to think about, if you're someone who has a ton of responsibility and you got to train this person, and you're like, yo, it's going to take this person 6 months to come up to speed or 3 months to come up to speed. And sometimes you got to ask yourself, like, yo, do I really have time to set this person up for success the way that they're going to be needed, given that this is going to be completely new to them? So that's something else that you have to think about.
Yeah. And, that's why, I don't know what role he's looking to, I'm reading and talking at the same time, but I don't know what role he's trying to transition into. But that was, there was a couple things I kind of jotted down while we were preparing for this show. Is it sucks. I don't know any other way around it, but I felt like, and I think a lot of people do, especially as you get to mid to latter career, maybe in your, when you're in college or you're just starting out, you can transition easier because everyone's fairly new. But once you kind of get solidified in a career and you get, 5-10 years under your belt, and people kind of expect you to either stay in that career field, I would say either finding career fields that complement the skills that you already have. So it's more of a horizontal transition. But then also determining, like, the part that I said that sucks is taking the responsibility on yourself. I'm like, man, I don't want to drop $25,000 to $50,000 to go back to school. But if I want to get into this career field, that looks like something I'm going to have to do. Like, there's may not be a way around it. There's not one that I could readily identify. And that's probably going to be the easiest. And I'm, I've said it for years, I'm not even the biggest advocate of school for school's sake. But I am an advocate of school when you know the means to the end, like it's a outcome driven versus I'm going to go and then someone's going to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And show me what to do.
Yeah. And it's usually going to cost you one way or another. So maybe you have to go back to school to make that transition. So you got that tuition, or maybe you're going to have to take a decrease in pay to be able to make that jump. Usually it's one of the two, if not both in some case. Well, usually if you go back for a master's program or an advanced program, you're going to have the potential to earn more. But if it's more of just a certification program, you could end up earning more. You could end up being the same, or you could still end up being a little bit less. Because I know when I really wanted to get back into the HR side of things, and I'll talk more about this down when we really get into it. But when I wanted to go back into more of a HR generalist type of role, which is kind of what I went to school for, I had to go through a series of steps where I thought about, all right, what do I need? What's going to make me more attractive? What's going to signal that I'm serious about this field? And I had to pass the PHR certificate, or professional and human resources certification exam, as part of the process for that. And it was something that really helped me get the role, but I ended up still also having to take a bit of a pay decrease as well to make that happen. But it was expected because I was kind of changing fields in some ways.
Yeah. And we talked about this somewhat on another show where we were talking about how you use your whiteboard and the exercise for determining what's important to you. Because one of his questions here is, or one of his fears is, I fear that I'll have a career change and end up feeling the same way about the next job. And I mean, that's a very real possibility. That's a very real reality for some people. It's like, oh, I'm going to change job and that's it. And then when they get the next job, and they're equally, or in worst case scenarios, more unhappy at the new job. And my advice there would be to determine what's important to you to the degree possible beforehand. Like, don't use the job to figure out, will I be happy? Because that's a much more riskier proposition than to say, okay, what things are important to me that I think or know will make me happy, and then and align a job with that, versus trying to find a job and then you're there already or stuck, and then you're trying to find happiness in that job, and it doesn't necessarily align with what the outcome that you thought you were going to have. And another thing you said when you were kind of responding to the question, I actually thought was a really great comment. It's something I've struggled with over the years, is what I'm good at isn't necessarily what aligns with the jobs that I want to do.
Yeah.
So I'm good at my job. I'm a good public speaker. I'm good at auditing. I'm good at, identifying all these issues that are important to our field. But those don't necessarily personally motivate me on a day-to-day basis. Like, yeah. I'm really, I guess I'm saying just being good at my job doesn't necessarily make me happy.
Yo,
I had to find other things that were more fulfilling and telling. And as I shared, I'm going to let you comment. One of those things was I realized with the writing over the years and the profession and what I was kind of having to struggle with, I spent a long time and I used to talk to my boss / mentor about this. Like, I'm not an auditor. I'm too cool to be an auditor. I'm not, I'm eventually get out of this field. I'm just doing this for the money. And like being good at it was, one reason that I stayed. But ultimately, I had to accept, I am like this career allows me to do other things in my life that do make me happy. And one of the probably the biggest things and that I've learned over the years, and I've seen a few articles on this now, is tailoring your job to the degree possible to emphasize the things that you do enjoy about it. So for me, it was mentoring and developing people. That's ultimately where I found my most happiness. So I try to carve the most of that out at my job. And so we get a mutual benefit out of it that I'm benefiting and making the peer or the team or my colleagues or the company or whomever stronger, better, and more well-rounded. But I also get the benefit of, hey, this is the thing that I like most about my job.
Right.
So I try to do that more often.
And there are things you can do, whether it's having a conversation with your boss about projects you really want to get involved in. Because if you have a good manager, they're going to ask you about what you want to work on, what's interesting to you. And they may even expect you to come to them with stuff when things are on your mind and you're like, yo, I really want to get into this. And I had one of those conversations recently where I was like, yeah, XYZ is cool, but I really want to start doing more of this. And then it becomes a conversation of, okay, like, how do we start to shape this to make it more like what's going to work for you? Because with the way that you're explaining it to us, it's still going to allow you to focus on your core role and it's going to allow you to add value in a new way. And it could be like, I want to attend more trainings. I want to facilitate something. I have this project idea that I think would be good. And a lot of times, if you're already delivering on what's expected of you, they're going to be supportive of you taking that chance or modifying your role or something about the environment in a way that's going to make you productive and hopefully keep you around longer.
Agreed. And then just I think the last question here, I don't know if we've addressed this one. What do you believe are the best methods or resources in finding the right career to pursue? I'm still going to say that's networking. I mean, it's all the... I mean, unless you have other thoughts, for me, it's actually fairly pretty traditional. I mean, LinkedIn, I have a resource I use for the public sector, which is governmentjobs.com. And I think it's USA Jobs for the federal government. But I mean, I don't have a specific like app or resource that's different or differentiates from how I would go about searching the career I want to pursue. It's kind of built on when I want to make a career change or look into a career field. Now I just kind of try to better align what I want before I go out and find the job. But I think a lot of the times we kind of go through, I won't say life, but definitely through college and definitely the early part of your career where you're like, well, I'm just going to take the first job that calls, or I'm going to take the first opportunity that comes. And then you get there and then you're wondering why you're not fulfilled because you never really went through the whole exercise of, is this even what I want to be doing?
Yeah. And this is and some of these are items that I was going to cover in the deeper dive that I'm now like, oh, well, you already covered that and that and that. And I'm like, how do I restructure this to make it sound like it's still original?
My bad.
No. It's all good. Yo, that just means that we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. I mean, we've touched on this on quite a few shows, and I'm sure we will again. But it kind of goes back to my ever infamous, and I know some people don't like it, but either now it's a question or maybe it's still a statement, but is work supposed to make you happy? And I've largely fell on the side of no. I mean, that is not the purpose of work. The purpose of work is to meet outcomes aligned are described in your job description. And then if the job is holding you accountable to what was in the job description that you originally applied for, then I feel like they held up their end of the bargain. Now, work shouldn't make you miserable. They shouldn't be berating you or attacking you personally. But I feel like that's not limited to, is work supposed to make you happy? I think it's actually the exception that most people find a job that aligns with their happiness, because that's not really how most people go about looking for work. They're looking for pay, stability. I mean, there's other people, but it depends on what you're willing to sacrifice or what you're willing to do as far as, I'm going to take this job because it makes me happy as a person. I am only taking this role because it makes me happy. And most people, like, that doesn't even cross their, and I do interviews all the time. Like, that doesn't, like, when I ask people, hey, why do you want this, you know, why do you want to work here? No one has ever said, because this will make me happy. Like, ever in like 10 years of interviews, because that's not usually what people are pursuing work. They're trying to, that might lead to happiness, the work life balance or the income or salary or something like that might be a means to happiness. But they're usually like, if most people had the choice, they wouldn't go to work. That is happiness. They wouldn't work.
So they may be working, but it might be for themselves. Like, I think most people would want to do something that has some type of purpose. Well, I say that not having millions and millions and not knowing what I would do if I actually was in a situation where I had the choice to, like, not work at all. I'd probably still do something that has some type of productive and redeeming value to society. Just not this.
Yeah, exactly. There's some version of a quote that's like, if you do find a job or pursue your dreams or do your hobby or something like that, and then you'll never work a day in your life. And that's, you know, whatever. That's all altruistic and nice.
I don't completely believe that, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, if I did what I liked, at least right now, I can think of no reasonable way of making what I make. And so, and this kind of, he touches on this a little bit in his question, and I've said this before, I don't think I'm alone, but pay is important to me. It's not everything. It's not a means to an end, but it definitely influenced my decisions, and it has over the years in different degrees. So I just don't have it in me to pursue my dreams if my dreams don't net me a certain amount of income. I am actually willing to sacrifice those dreams or do the less of them if I can do something that would allow me or provide me the means to pursue those dreams through a different avenue. But I'm not going to do my dreams full time if my dreams met me $0 an hour. I'm just not that person.
Yeah, that's not fun either. And I
actually respect people that can.
Yeah, and that's something to know about yourself, just your level of risk aversion. I think that's what I'll call it, you know, because there are some people who are like, yo, you know what? I know that I can move back home and stay there for 6 months to a year. If I go completely broke and file bankruptcy, not a big deal. I'll see my way out of it. Me, I'm not that guy either. I'm like, yo, I need stability. I do want to do my own thing ultimately, but I can't just jump away. I guess someone's going to say, no, it's not can't. You're choosing not to jump away. And I'm like, no, it feels like I can't. Like, it feels like I can't jump away and just go do that thing and then find myself financially screwed in a few months if things don't work out. Though I probably could get another job. There's a certain level of security that I like to have and that I want to have, that at least right now having a job provides. But, you know, eventually, if everything goes well in terms of the savings and everything else, there comes a point where maybe that doesn't have to be the case and I can go focus on something 100% for a period of time with a very specific allocated amount of money.
Right. And I went through the whole exercise of I think everyone does, but I want to do something that makes me happy while also making a exorbitant amount of money doing it. I think that's pretty much most people try to get their alignment. And when that didn't happen, then I kind of came to the decision point of, because I have friends all up and down the spectrum, because I have folks that, you know, make 2-3 times what I make and, you know, on varying degrees of happiness. But I think we're kind of broadly speaking to a self-assessment, like, what is important to you? Like, and then does that align with your happiness? Because yes, I guess I am making the choice. I don't want to take this step back. If I could have both, I would. But if I can't have both, then I just have to choose the lesser evil, I guess. And for me, I was really, it was like my aha moment at like 20 or 20, maybe I was 25 or something to that effect of, you know, I'm not miserable. I know that's not a great baseline to start from, but it's like, I guess putting it in perspective, like, you know, do I love it? I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's cool. It's literally like, it's all right, you know, but it's not like I just wake up in the morning like, oh man, I can't wait to go audit some stuff. Like, I would be impressed if anyone is. But that being said, it's like, well, I do also have those friends like, man, I hate my job. and I hate my boss, and I hate all my coworkers, and I hate my life. And I'm like, well, at least I'm not there. I'm like, I'd rather be like, hey, it's cool, and go and do it and be good at it. And I also kind of, I mean, I just kind of have the mindset of like, well, if I'm tasked with doing this, I'm going to try to be the best person at doing it that I can be within reason without driving myself insane. And that's just how I generally work. And so I kind of look at that scenario. I'm like, okay, I have those things checked off. The job is good. You know, it doesn't make me unhappy. And there's even things about it that I can expand on. Like I said, with the mentoring and developing and work, working with people actually makes me happier, but I actually have so many other tasks that I have to accomplish that I'm responsible for. That's not always the largest part of my job. So I'm like, okay, how can I expand on that? Or where are avenues where I can exercise and stretch that part of the job so that, as you said, I can tailor the job that I have. And I was trying to look this up on Google, but apparently I couldn't remember who wrote the song. I think it's Luther Vandross. But, you know, if you can't be with the one you want, love the one you're with, as far as the job goes, like if you can't have the job you want, you know, try to make the job you have the one you want, you know. And so tailoring it as much as possible. And what I'm not saying is sabotage your job. Like, okay, well, I don't like this, so I'm going to stop doing these things that are in my job description that are expected of me, and I'm only going to do these things I like. That is not what I'm saying. But maybe those things that do align, that are beneficial to you and the company. And like you said, maybe having a conversation with your boss, like, hey, I like these things. I think I'm good at these things. Is there any way I can do more of them within this current role? And then one other thing I was going to say is another, and maybe you can help me with this. It's a harder path, but I've seen it done where people go and talk to someone in that department and say, because that just goes back to networking. And like, is there something, is there a transition path here to getting in this department that I am unaware of? And I remember at my previous job, there was this urban legend. I never saw this thing, but there was this urban legend that someone had made a matrix of all the equivalent jobs.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say something like that.
Yeah, and it was like a career pathway spider web where, like, if you worked here, but if you did XYZ, you can transition to this in 3 years. And allegedly, I never saw this thing, but it sounded amazing. It sounded, and maybe that's why, because it was maybe somebody's dream that, and it existed in someone's file cabinet that apparently never revealed it. But what I say all that to say is sometimes people are like, yes. Like, do this, do that, report to me, talk about this. I know Chuck, go talk to Chuck, talk to Dan. And in 5-6 months, I know such and such is opening up, and then you can talk to Cheryl. And then you'd be surprised what a simple conversation may initiate, because, and we did talk about this on another show for sure, I think a lot of people take the expectation of the job's supposed to develop me as if the job is psychic.
Yeah.
Like, there's just this corporate entity existing somewhere holding you down. And I'm like, I will try to do the best to benefit my staff as much as possible. And I specifically ask at staff meetings or emails, I'm like, hey, if you want to do something, please tell me, because there is no other way I will know. Yeah. And
if you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
Learned over the years, that has to be said. And at the end, I mean, I say it like every 2 to 3 months. I'm like, hey, is there something you want to do or somewhere you want to be or something new that you want to try? Please tell me. And then I can say yes, no, or I'll get back to you on that. I'll try to find an avenue for that to take place. But a lot of people, especially if you don't explicitly ask them, they'll just assume. They're like, well, or they'll leave. Even worst case scenario, especially if it's a good employee, is they're like, well, this job's not developing me, or there's no, I've reached the plateau, there's nowhere to go, and you know, they don't value me, so I'm going to leave. And I'm, you know, you then you're like at the exit interview, and they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, I just wanted to develop and no one ever talked to me. I'm like, why didn't you
say something?
Yeah, just say something.
That's one thing I have no patience for, man, is people who are like, yo, I didn't have any opportunities for this, that, or the other thing. And then you're like, well, what'd you do? Like, did you, like, what happened? Like, did they just never responded when you requested? And they're like, well, no, I never said anything, but why do I have to take charge of my career? I'm paraphrasing, but that's the way it comes off sometimes. It's like, well, you know, I'm here. And they're supposed to develop me. My manager is supposed to develop me, even if I don't say anything about it. How are they supposed to know what's on your mind? They have a job too. You have a job. I have a job. There's all of these other things going on. It's similar to being in a relationship. You can sit there and be stewing about something, but yo, I'm trying to make dinner and you're mad about something at the TV. Like, you got to tell me that.
And another thing that, I'll probably be struggling with the rest of my life, but I definitely think I'm improving on. First of all, I didn't even recognize it for years, and I was in a supervisor role. But that is, I kind of took, and maybe it's every manager's approach to when they start, is I'm just going to treat everyone the same. It's like the person who, I don't see color. I'm colorblind. It is like, and I quickly learned, or I was, actually, I didn't quickly learn. It took me a while. But that is a failed approach. And I say that from the manager's perspective, because staff assumes that as well. It's like, well, he did or she did such and such for such and such, so they should do the same for me. And that might have been luck. That might have been happenstance. It might have been coincidence, which is probably most likely is. Or that person specifically said they want to do that thing. And I'm like, okay, well, you take it. And if you don't voice that what's important to you or what you're interested in, I can say 100% that I have no idea what people are thinking or want from day to day, because people aren't motivated the same across the board. You know, I have had people that report to me, and we've talked about this, where they just want to show up, work. Sometimes they don't even want to do that. And then they want to go home. And like, if I stay out of their way, they are the happiest person. In fact, if they see me coming, they'll try to avoid me in the hallway. They don't even want to interact with me on a day-to-day basis. And as far as I'm concerned, cool. As long as you do your job and you do what I expect of you, we don't have to talk. I've worked with people for years. I don't know if they have family, kids, dog. I have no idea what they do outside of work. Then I've worked with people for 3 minutes and I know more than I would ever want to know about this individual. But I just, you know, it seems like common sense, but I think it is often forgotten. People are different. And your manager or managers or whomever is a person as well. And I mean, you have to communicate these things that are important to you, because otherwise they definitely won't be a priority. I can tell you, like, especially, I mean, this was a good week. Like, this week, I don't think I touched base with anybody, because I walked in and almost from Monday to Friday, my calendar was meetings. Like, it just seemed like I was just running from meeting to meeting.
That sounds about right for a manager.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows, you know, how stuff felt that week. But, you know, I just try to have the quote unquote open door policy. And I'm going to talk about this topic specifically on another show, some things that I'm trying to improve on, because I realized that people would come in, I'm typing on the computer and I'm not even really paying attention. But there's some things that I'm just trying to improve on, as this conversation is as important to me as it is to you. Now, whether I can have it right now is another means. If I say, hey, you know, I see that this conversation is important, but put it on my calendar, versus I give 50% of my attention to, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 activities and they all fail. You know, I just rather try to allocate 100 for the time that I have to dedicate time to that activity.
Boom.
But I think it's really important and forgotten that it's a two-way communication. I think it happens throughout the career, but it's definitely more evident in people who are early in their career not being comfortable with having those conversations. And I would encourage anyone and everyone up and down, wherever you fall in your tenure, to have those, especially if you've never had them. It's it's been surprising to me sometimes. People were like, yeah, I don't talk to my manager. And I'm like,
how does that work? It was like, well, I just turn stuff in. I mean, I do my job and I take off. I'm like, you don't talk about development at all? Like, how does...
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, it's in my peer and my network, my friends and beyond, people were like, yeah, man, I just had my performance evaluation. I'm like, oh, what y'all talking about? Like, I don't know. It was an automated process. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Like,
that's like the most, like,
and I mean,
a passive performance review where it's like the person does their self review online, the manager enters their stuff online, and they just like read each other's feedback and just like never talk about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I get that. I mean, especially this automated world that we live in. But again, if you're not getting the first step, I feel like, or at least it can be, is to have that conversation. If you're not getting the development and feedback or touch points that you wish you had. Now, if they ignore you from there or you don't get it, they're like, you know what, I don't care. Then that, I mean, hey, you know, maybe then that will at least, I feel like you would feel more comfortable knowing you made that effort to improve your environment or job versus just leaving and kind of leaving it in the unknown.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh, bump the mic. Let me see here. I think this second question in the other part, it's like another episode in itself. So we can hold on that piece and close out on this episode. So I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances, part one of what I think is going to be like a small little series about making career changes here. So if you have questions or things you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. And if you're enjoying the show, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us reach more people, which means we can help more people. And then if you're like, yo, I'm not really doing this iTunes thing. It's too many steps. I got to sign up for iTunes and go in and leave a review. Just share the show with your network. There's probably someone that follows you somewhere or someone that you're connected to who could benefit from the conversations that we're having here on the show. So anything else from you on this one?
Yeah, I would only just share with Daryl, like, especially I realize I'm reading this again at 26. This is exactly where you should be. I hope this conversation has helped. But the fact that you're even asking these questions is a good indicator. Like, I think there might be some, I wouldn't say insecurity, but like, you know, should I even be asking these questions? And I just think that's something you go through in your career. And I realize that around that age, those are the exact same questions I was asking. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, I think you're in a good place. The fact that you're even asking these questions is a good sign.
It is. So we'll definitely talk more about this. We have another question from another listener that's also related to career changes that we'll discuss next time. But until then, be safe. We out. Peace.